Hello, my name's Vincent and I'm an addict. I remember what I was saying, people asked me, am I quite nervous? I remember I'd done the 15-minute share, and I think it was about 3 years ago, and my heart was pumping out of my chest. I was really nervous. So on a level, I'm not as nervous as that. And because I experience things now, and I know I get totally, I take them to blowing straight out of water. I was in the toilet. I said, do you want to put Rocky on? As I walk out the toilet door, play Rocky, and then I'll sit down. That's one of my qualities. I'm a cheeky. I try not to swear. I think I've done 3 shares in 9 years where I've never sworn. And if I start swearing, it's like my disease is activated and I'll get an allergic reaction to it and I just can't stop. And you people think I have Tourette's. And that's not exaggerated, that's a gospel. It was funny, I was listening to you, and I was listening to the format at the beginning to look for the similarities rather than the differences. When I was new, everything was different. You could have used the same drugs as me, done certain things like me, come from my lifestyle. He was different than me. It was very, very, very powerful in the beginning. And now I'm listening to Lee, and it would have been, I would have thought, oh, posh bird. Sorry about that. I'll say things, and I don't mean to harm anyone sometimes, but I'll say things because I tried to be honest, and then afterwards I went, you shouldn't have said that. It would have been a massive, you're not like me. And it was very, very powerful in the beginning. You're not like me. And I was sitting there and I think, you're really like me. And that's the difference, what it is today. I can take every walk of life out of here and see the similarity that most people in here, well, you all should really have a problem with drugs if you're sitting in here. Or you're nuttier than me. And I'm pretty gone. So let's start. I was in the thingy, where do I start? And it was like, as Lee, I'll start in the beginning. And so it's funny, like, I come from Hackney, a very picturesque part of London, and I grew up in a family of 7 of us. My dad was a raging alcoholic. My mum tried to look after 7 of us, but she couldn't do enough for me. She just couldn't do enough, and I realised by going through the steps, I'm so ungrateful and so selfish, so self-centred. She tried everything for me, and I just couldn't see it. She never got me a fucking, chopper for Christmas. You never got me a grifter for Christmas. I got my first bike dragged out of the Regent's Canal, and I had to go and nick the wheels from the Children's Hospital on Abbey Road, and the seat, and everything, and put my first bike together. So I was really, I looked at everything, but I suffered with asthma quite bad. And my mum used to walk back the streets of Hackney in the 70s where it was just pure fog. And my mum used to walk around the streets with her and my eldest sister, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning where I couldn't sleep when I'm having asthma attacks, walking around the streets of Hackney to try and help me breathe. And I could not see that. And so what a beautiful thing they'd done for me. It was like, you never got me this. I had holes in my... There were 7 of us. It was all hand-me-down clothes, holes in my shoes, where we never used to have cornflake boxes. They was gone within minutes, the boxes, because they had to go in our shoes to cover up the holes. And the carrier bags in our socks, so in the wintertime, my feet wouldn't get wet. And so it was all shame and embarrassment and things like this, and... I grew up, and it was quite funny. I used to have rows with my brothers and sisters, there's 7 of us, and I used to have rows with them saying, like, if you grew up the way I grew up, you would be like me. And they'd look at me, it's a common thing that came through my life, but they looked at me, you're off your nut. And I could never, ever see what they was on about until I came into recovery and started doing, and they lived in the same house as me. They grew up exactly the same as me. They're just not like me. I am so, so oversensitive to this world and everything that goes on it. It kills me. And I can so identify with drugs being the solution to me. There's nothing on this earth what comes anywhere near what drugs do for my body and my mind. I will take them to extreme lengths. That is quite shocking. And I started using drugs. I'll give an analogy. I started sniffing glue when I was 10 years old. The hallucination went on for 27 years. I can remember when I was like 10, 11 years old. There used to be three of us on a tube of glue. And then it was me on a tube of glue. And then it was me on like a tub of glue. And then it was me going into wood factories, knitting gallon tins, pouring them in dustbin liners, carrier bags on my own. And I used to be walking down the road days afterwards. Because I got to I look at my nephews and people like young, I think what I've done to myself at 10 years old, 11 years old, is shocking. I used to walk down the road days after I'd been sniffing glue, and I didn't know if I was in this world or not. I didn't know if I was still alive. I thought, I used to walk down and think, am I still in that dream I was in? Because I started dying. Trees have eaten me. Like when I heard a thing like falling off a big block. In a dream, you fall off a big block. Before you hit the floor, you'll wake up. But when I sniff Evo stick, the trees eat me. and vividly, I was pouring with blood trying to stop the tree from eating me, and I've still blood coming from me. The foam chair I was sitting on was melting. That's me melting into the ground. And my friend slapping me round the face because he hadn't gone into hallucination yet. And I think it's a conspiracy. He's in with a tree trying to kill me. And then I come out of that, and I'm in shock for a little boy. And that's quite scary. It's quite funny, but it's for a little boy. And that's how my life evolved from 10 years old. And I can so, you know, like when I was growing up, it's like, I'll take drugs to get out of my nut. I'll take drugs to get out. I can so identify why I took drugs to get out of my nut. And I mean to get out of my nut. I mean, the worst place on this earth for me is to be in my nut. That's why I could understand that saying, though. I took drugs to get out of my nut. I used to just take drugs to get out of my nut. I understand that today, what it means to me. And by the age of 13 years old, I got expelled. I'm going to be the best drug dealer there is. And I started selling drugs, and it was... Part of it was because I loved taking drugs, but the other part is so I could start afford to buy myself clothes and get other things what other kids had. And so I wouldn't feel that embarrassed or whatever anymore, that I could mix with kids and I wouldn't have holes in my trainers and I could have a pair of trainers on and things like that. So that's how my life just evolved. But that hallucination went on for the 27 years and I was in a drug induced coma and I couldn't see what was happening in it. And what happened to me on the 29th of December 2006, or a couple of days before that actually, I got 12 steps, which I thought was the biggest liberty in the world. one of my friends got involved with my drug use. I went, what a cheeky. He got me chucked out of my ass. And I live in Western Supermare now. And my own group is a basic text study group on a Wednesday night in Western Supermare. And I live there now because what happened, my friend got me chucked out of my ass. Because I left the treatment centre. I was in the treatment centre 9 weeks. So I had a week clean in there. And I just carried on using it. And so I left the way I went in there and I came back home, I carried on using and he phoned up my house and got me chucked out. But the next thing what came out of my sister's mouth was, he said, if you want another chance, you can go and live with him. And what happened, I went out that day and I went to an NA meeting in Mare Street and I had my head on the floor, I was completely out of my box, head on the floor. And then it came to newcomers time and I was just crying and I said, I can't stop. I only went to the meeting to get out of my nut because I didn't want to be around my family who's completely gone. So I went there, and then it just, and then the next day I went to my doctor's, got some more Valium off him, and went over to the drug dealer's house, got some more drugs. And my sister came into the bedroom that morning, and it was the first time I could ever acknowledge the fear what I put into my family. She was terrified that she had to go to work and leave me in the ass. She went, swear on mummy's grave that you leave the ass. And I swore on my mother's grave that I'd leave. And I left. No intention to stop using drugs. I got on a train to Western Supermare and just carried on using them. Within a couple of days, my friends started taking me to meetings. Leave your drugs outside. No way was I leaving drugs outside a meeting. And a couple of days later, he said, have you got anything on you? And I'd done a strange thing. I went over to my coat pocket, got a bottle of Valium out, and handed them over to him. He's turned round, walked straight to the toilet, and I've heard, oh, God, no way, would he? No way, he's testing me here. Later on that day, he's going to give me a couple of Valium, he's going to detox me. That night come, he went to bed with his wife. He didn't give me nothing. And so I'm sitting in his front room early hours of the morning, realising he has actually chucked my drugs away. And I've never ever felt so scared in my life. And I was sitting in, and things I'll share now, I try and practice a bit of courage. You know, I got a bit emotional there speaking about my mum. I try not to avoid things that make me emotional today. I try, and but I speak about some things so often, I get used to it, so I don't get emotional. But I'm quite nervous, not so nervous as I started off, but I go to things, and it's just there at that moment I experience a feeling, and I'm not ashamed of experiencing that, and I try. I don't avoid things that will give me a feeling, or I might cry into a meeting. And so that night he's gone to bed and left me in there, and I had tears. I wasn't crying, I just had tears coming down my cheek. And I looked up and I said, please look after me, I'm going to kill myself, or I'm going to use. My obsession to use left me that day. And my friends started to bring me to meetings. I got a service, I done started making tea at a meeting, which became my first own group. I got involved with H&I straight away. I wasn't clean enough, but I started making tea at the H&I committee meeting. I've done H&I now as long as I've been clean. I'm 9 years and a month clean now. So I've done H&I that length of time, and I absolutely love doing H&I. I absolutely love sharing my experience. If I get asked to go and share anywhere, if I can, I will go. I'm so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. I will do not anything. I do most things. What's in my ability, and so I face that fear and that nervousness, and I think it's quite strange. I might be beneficial to another addict. This useless piece of space is a very, very powerful tool to another addict. And so I got involved. I got a sponsor within 25 days being clean. And I just read the Just for the Day reading. It said about having experiences and in recovery and going through them. And recovery for me, being clean for me, I'm such a long-term drug user and I had nothing else. So I can imagine what a long-term prisoner comes out of 27 years of doing prison and coming back out into society. And that's what actually happened to me. Being clean and in recovery sometimes is more scarier, everything together than using drugs. This life is harder sometimes for me because I feel and I think than any drug use came close to. I've been in some situations in drug use, but take the drugs away and living life without the use of drugs, I'll take my hat off to anyone who tries it and keeps it up. It's one of the most scariest. With my mind, from zero is the best thing in the world, 100 is the worst. My mind normally pops over to the 100 mark when even nothing's going on. Wake up in the morning, what's going to happen today? Doom, straight away. And what I carry on doing the things I do every day. So that day when I didn't know what happened. And it was only people sharing other experiences like that that I had to start getting the courage to say, you need to be a bit more honest about your experiences in recovery, because a powerful thing, in my first year in Western Supermare, we used to have meetings about 150 odd, packed, and there's people I grew up with and people I've used with, and I'd be the only person sitting in there. It was painfully lonely. I don't feel like that no more. And so it was very beneficial. The people in Narcotics Anonymous governed me so much, and they didn't realise what they governed me just by a word, what I could identify with, because I'm so different than everyone. And I learnt this. It was funny. We was out in Croatia. Someone put this on an antisocial network site. That's what it's for. Unsocial network, ain't it? That's what it does to me. And this person said about ego. And it's a thing, and the guy explained it as I understood it. He said the ego is a pattern of thinking, but normally puts a label on something. Once I put a label on something, I can see the difference between me and that. It separates me. I'm isolated, I'm alone, and that's where my addiction wants me. So that's what I understood. Words in here are very powerful to me. Then once I understand how words are, because I'm not educated. I left school when I was 13 years old. I'm not a very educated person. And I need to, the most basic things in this life. Sometimes I'll share things and I think, it's not for some people, it's for some people like me that come from the world I come from. And so I have to be honest about my life and my recovery so I might be beneficial to another addict. And so I try to be as honest as I can about my experience. So there's things in recovery what I've learned to do what some people might take for granted. But massive thing for me, what helps me get through life without the use of drugs, is prayer. And I use this thing, I didn't know this in the beginning, it started to see things where I understand it myself. It's like we're powerless over our addiction and our lives become unmanageable. Well, to me, it's like I'm powerless over my thinking and my internal condition becomes unmanageable. It goes all out of... I go into fear, and the way I feel is totally, totally alien to me and very, very scary. And I need something what brings my thinking back into a manageable state, and the way I feel becomes more manageable. And when I pray, it helps me. Because I need... it's funny, I'm 47 on Sunday. I need something as a 47-year-old man to be looked after. Drugs looked after me. I remember my friend had his baby and I was holding her one day and I was feeding her a bottle of milk. And the next time I looked down, she was gouging on a warm bottle of milk. She felt secure in my arms. She got her warm bottle of milk and she felt safe and secure and she fell asleep in my arms. That's me. I need that. Drugs done that for me. Take that away. I'm an innocent child all over again in an alien world where I need something to look after me. And that's only me, because I know people in recovery, some people in recovery don't pray, don't believe in God, and I never impose my belief or what I do on anyone. I'm not one of them people who say, you need to get this in your life and you will die. It's not my way of doing things. This is what I do and it's really, really helped me. And that I'll always keep it to what I do. And I, last time I was here, I was sharing about... I'll give examples of why this helped me. And I got married. I come into recovery with a hold all with old using clothes. All holes in them, blood over them, everything. And come into recovery with nothing. And I got married in September. I've been with my partner, my wife now, for 8 years. I got married in September and we've got two beautiful children, two girls. Most beautiful things in the world. Where daily I want to kill them. Most beautiful things in the world, most frustrating thing in the world, I want to kill them. But one of my daughters suffers with asthma and she got brought to my wife, because she was my partner at the time, brought her to the doctors, and I can remember the day I turned around, she's walking through the patio doors of the house and I see there's something drastically wrong. And she's gone to me, Grace has got heart murmur. And my whole world just collapsed. Now, where I said about my thinking's gone through 100 now. I looked at my daughter and I thought, she's going to be taken from me any second now. I'm looking at her, she's going to go. Heart murmur, death, That's what I knew, and that's where I stood. So I phoned up the doctors. I need to know. They said, OK, we'll come back in the morning. We'll do another check. We went back in the morning, and the doctor said to me, yeah, Gracie's got a heart murmur. And what we'll do, we'll send you to the Bristol Children's Hospital to get a specialist to get it checked out. And I had to go through 4 months. My family always used to say to me, he's a natural-born worrier. They could see it, and I knew I worried a lot, but other people would see it more than me. And when things really happen, I really, really worry. And so we had to go through 4 months of waiting for my daughter to be brought to the hospital. And if it wasn't for me praying and what kept my mind in a state where I could manage and the way I felt, where I, it blew me away. We went to the hospital 4 months later, and my Gracie has got a heart murmur, and it's called an innocent heart murmur, what many children have, but they're not detected. I didn't know that. I think my baby's dying. I walked out of the hospital and I said to my wife, I went, that was step three in action for me there. I just could not believe. And it's happened to me so many times in recovery when I need something. All I used to think about was using drugs and getting drugs. I was obsessed. I used to think it was, you know, like I'm awake at night because I need drugs. Obsession. I need drugs. My obsession can keep me awake at night without any drugs in my body. It will ruin me just as much as no. Oh, it's unbelievable what my mind can do to me. It does all the same things what drugs, when I always would blame drugs. And now I ain't got drugs to blame and I can see it all. It's me. It's very, very powerful, my mind. It justifies and rationalises, and then I'll go. I come into recovery. I had my right leg amputated. I've had my left lung, the bottom part of my left lung, cut away. I've got a big, massive scar down my back. They did not bother me one bit. That wasn't my problem. My problem was to get more drugs in me. I come out of hospital with my right leg amputated, and I was at home. Any drug addict would wet their pants at the size of the amount of drugs I was getting daily from my hospital. They would be over the moon with the amount of drugs I was taking daily, prescription drugs. But I'm sitting in my house now, all alone, taking these drugs with my family. What happened? I was in the house taking drugs, and I started getting thoughts. And as when I come into recovery, I could start seeing this is my problem. I started getting thoughts, and I started imagining myself in my bedroom as an old grey man, never to mix in society again. It's a very, very powerful thought I had. I started getting really, really lonely. It's like, oh, no. And then I had another thought. Do you know what? We just went out and smoked a bit of gear. We won't inject no more. That was the problem. We'll just go out and we'll smoke it. I got a sense of ease come over me just from the thought. I went, yeah, I know how to mix with drug addicts. I can do that. I justified and I rationalised it. And I went out of my house in a wheelchair with one leg, got a bit of gear, came back to my house. And I can remember it like it was yesterday. My brother and sister opened the door. I'm rushing around my house now as fast as I could with one leg. I'm rushing about looking for needles or anything because there was no tin foil. I must have left an old needle somewhere. I've come down. They had cleared the old house out while I was in hospital. And I come down and I said to my brother and sister, would you go to the shop and buy me some foil? And they looked at me again. You're fucking nuts. And I couldn't see it. All I could see was, what a liberty. You won't go to the shop and buy some foil. And then I said, I'll show you. I'm in a wheelchair, go to the shop. I'll come back with my foil and I'll smoke my gear up in the bedroom. That lasted a little while. I needed more. So what my mind told me, what was going to happen, I'm going to get out of my house. I'm not going to smoke no more. Injecting was a problem. It was a complete and utter lie. And I believed it. And that's what I suffered with, because I was in my house for the next six years, not wanting to leave it for 5 minutes in case I miss out on something. Injecting everything. Drug addicts used to come around my house. And I knew, a lot of people stopped injecting because they see what happened to me when I lost my leg. And a lot of my friends stopped injecting. They used to come around my eyes and say, are you fixing? I said, no. They said, well, what's the blood on the ceiling doing? I said, what's that happening on it? And on your television screen, what's that? I just go, oh. And I felt embarrassed. I felt quite insane that I was injecting. And I used to sit on my bed with my leg off, and I could not help myself. And I was quite scared. You've got to get it in you. And I'm going in my other leg. I just couldn't stop myself. I've injected in any vein I can see in my body, and I mean any vein I can see, and I will inject in. So when I come out, when I got clean, and I had another one, when they took my lung away, I was in the chest hospital in Bethnal Green, getting people to bring me up drugs to the hospital. And I'm thinking, I can't smoke because they've just operated on my lung. They need to bring up some needles because that's an healthy way of self-care. Like, if I put it in my bloodstream, at least I put it onto my lung. And then I come out, that was 1999, I come out of hospital that Christmas, and I walked into my house, and my family's got colds, coughing. Oh, excuse me, would you mind putting your hand over your mouth while you're coughing, please? Don't you know, I've got a bad lung. Well, liberty. And that is me. That is me. It's completely, completely insane. So when I come into recovery, I didn't stop using and think, oh, I'm clean, happy, clappy. I went into shock. That 27 years of hallucination, I come out the windscreen of the car crash in shock. I come out here brain dead, completely alien to this world. And I was just sat in these meetings. People came over me, gave me their numbers. I thought they weren't trying to chat me up. And then months went past. Like, I think I was about 4 months clean when I started to come round. And then all of a sudden, it all kicked in. It kicked in, 27 years of what you've done to yourself. And I become so, I didn't even realise I was angry. People said to me, like, I was 2.5 years clean, the skeezer came up to me and said, I didn't really mix with you, I thought you had Tourette's. I just came in here, 3 minutes from the floor, I'd be, just completely, I've never heard someone speak like the way I spoke. I was deranged when I stopped choosing. And I share that stuff because I don't want people to come in here. Because I used to be deranged, not just because of what happened to me. All yous lot could speak. All yous lot had little laughs. All yous lot had little wobbies, what you used to chat about. I used to sit and think, what have they got to talk about? I ain't got a clue in the world how to speak to people. And it used to make me more angry, and I used to sit there and it used to just kick. I was actually laughing outside a meeting. I'd be sitting in a meeting now, and all the thing would just be kicking. Look, you've done to yourself. Look, you've done to yourself. And I went into shock. Started to have to acknowledge what I had one leg and what I'd done to myself for drug use. Heroin was my wife. I would have done anything. I like cheating on heroin to appreciate heroin a bit more. Because I like smoking crack and injecting cocaine, so I really appreciate heroin. I like to take a few more Valium, so I really appreciate heroin. I took other drugs to appreciate heroin. She was my world. She was my world. They should make heroin legal just for Vincent. I used to have dreams. Do you know what? If I could get a job in Afghanistan in an opium factory, my life would be great. That's all I would need. If I could only just get out of my bedroom and get out to Afghanistan, my life would be great. There would be not a problem in this world. Just pump me with heroin and I'll be great. And that's how I am as a drug addict. So you can understand when I come, I've got a story, what people have heard before, but it tells you more from where I come from than drug use. I moved into my flat when I was 8 months clean. And that's when my mind, I was in a supported house with another 10 people. And my mind was quite quiet. It was loud, but it was quite quiet. But when I moved into a flat on my own, when I was 8 months clean, I'd never ever lived on my own before, he woke up. I was obsessed, just like I was like using drugs. But now it's the damage. I used to go to bed at night, mentally exhausted, thinking about the harm and damage I caused myself. Not my family. They come in when I went through the steps. The harm and damage. I started to acknowledge the harm and damage I caused my family. This was what I caused myself. And just speaking about my family, so I went through the process of going through the steps. And my dad's in recovery. On the 26th of December, my dad was 36 years in recovery. He couldn't do a thing for me. I had so much hatred and resentment. I thought I hated my dad. I never hated my dad. I loved my dad to bits. I hated the things I've seen my dad do. I love my dad to bits. When I had to go and make amends to my dad for the things I put him through, he said one of the hardest things in his recovery was that night when he had to sign the consent form to have my leg amputated. And he said that was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Because what they wanted to do, they wanted to take the whole of my leg away. But he said, no, leave him something. And they left me a little bit of my leg. And he said, my dad used to live on top of a pub at this stage. And he went home to the pub and he heard everyone drinking downstairs. And his son's in the hospital. They said he can have his... I had a priest come and visit me. Give my life. They thought I was going to die. They opened my leg up. They'd done a slit in my leg. They said they'd never seen nothing like it. My whole inside of my leg had been eaten away. And they didn't think I was going to survive. And my dad, I didn't think how my family must have felt sitting around that hospital bed. I did not consider one minute that they see their brother, their son, dying, and he just couldn't stop. I never thought how it affected anyone. It was only by going through the steps and see how, when I use drugs, it's just not about me. I thought I was a nice drug addict because I didn't harm people physically. I will torture you mentally and emotionally where you'd rather be dead. I never wish to harm anyone like that ever again. So since I've been doing this, I haven't used. So either mine which says, Vince, what are you doing this stuff for? I have another part of me which says, Vince, you need to carry on doing this stuff. You haven't used in 9 years and... You just carry on doing what you do. And that's how simple I carry on doing. I pray every morning. I pray every night. I'll do service at H&I still. I come to meetings. I try and be helpful to other addicts. I try and share my experience honestly as I can. And maybe I'm beneficial to another addict. And something strange in that is it's helped me live my life without the use of drugs. And that if I didn't get something out of Narcotics Anonymous, I would not come here. I might be a little bit crazy, right? But if I wasn't getting any benefit out of this, I guarantee you I wouldn't drive 150 miles to come and do a share for Narcotics Anonymous. I wouldn't do that. And so that's what it's done for me. And back to the story about... I moved into a flat. People said, you're going to share about this. They said, don't share about this. I said, no, if God wants me to share about it, I'll share about it. And sometimes I share about it, sometimes I don't. I moved into a flat and I had an electric meter and a quarterly gas meter. The electric meter had a key. I put the money in, I pushed my key in and I'll get electric. The quarterly gas meter, now I'm a worrier. I start looking at, oh, they've taken money out of my bank, I'm going to start getting in debt here, I'm not going to have money in the bank, what's going to happen? All started, I thought, oh, no, I'll do, I'll get come round and change my meter to a card meter. And I can remember they come round, done it, and there was £10 on the meter. And it was a Thursday morning because the Just for the Day meeting was on, and I had to have a shower before I went, oh, fuck me, my gas has run out. So I've gone out to where the card was. I went round the shop to put £10 on the gas meter. They put £10 on. I walked back to my flat. I've never opened a cabinet before. I've opened up the cabinet. I see a little slot in the machine. And I pushed it in the machine. And I stood there. And the fuck's he doing that? I didn't have the sense, like, Vince, bend down and read it. I was just looking at it for about 15, 20 minutes. Wow, there's a red button there and a black button. Do not touch them buttons, because if you touch that, that's official use. It must be official use. That you'll break the machine if you touch that thing. So I'm standing there for about 15 minutes looking at this money. I thought, I know what it is. The money ain't registered. I go back around the shop. I said to the lady, can you put another tenner on that? She said, there's a tenner on there. I went, I thought, I owe that the gas company. She went, I'll put another tenner on it. All right, for you. She's come, walked back around, and I've done the same thing again. I was standing there about 15, 20 minutes looking at this thing, and I didn't have a clue what to do. And I remembered I had a guy's number on my phone. I said, you come around and check my gas. It ain't working. He says, I'll charge £30 call-out fee. I went, you get my gas working, I'll pay you the £30. He's come around my house, he's gone into my house, took the boiler apart. He's gone, your boiler's perfect. He went, no, what? He went, where's your gas meter? He's gone out, he went, your gas meter's off. I didn't want to ask, oh, he's gone, your gas meter, where's your card? He put the card in the thing, press the red button for a second, and I had gas. I didn't know how to do that. I've got no shame or embarrassment now, did then, to say, I don't know how to do that. I'm a drug addict from a world where I took no responsibility about nothing. I learn things in here what you may take for granted, but there might be the other addict sitting there who, like me, said these two people are too clever than me. I was there, I was deranged, all yous were too clever. You didn't use like me, you didn't come from the world I come from. That's why I need to share my story, honestly, so an addict there might sit there and say, I understand what he's on about. And I've shared that story, and people have come up to me after and said, well, I've never heard someone say that before. And they didn't feel so alone. That's why when I come here, if I feel alone in here, it's not the right place for me to feel alone. And I know addicts stop using drugs and they start feeling alone. It's very, very therapeutic to me to know that I'm not different and I'm not strange and I'm not alone in this world. And there's some of the things why I do what I do. And I had something on my mind there to say, but I don't think... But I remember I've done shares before, and people used to share back to me and used to say, oh, so identify with what you just said. I'm sitting there, I've never said that. So if you think I said something, you best come up to me and ask me, and I might clarify it. Because I have a straight... I remember I said to my friend, I went to him once, I went, so-and-so, I heard so-and-so was in hospital. Later that night, it turned out, he asked, Vince said you was in hospital. I said, no, I asked you was the person in hospital. No, I didn't. I said, I know how addicts, once it hits your ears and it translates differently in your head. My share was excellent tonight. I do, I absolutely love Narcotics Anonymous, and by that stuff what my mind tells me daily, if I didn't do this stuff and I was out there in shock in the beginning, or even not, if I went through the shock part, I don't know if I could live life without the use of drugs. I think my mind, that's one of the most scariest things what I've heard in recovery, addicts clean, trying to kill themselves. It's terrifying for me. I have never ever been scared of drug use. I'm terrified of using. I'm terrified of dying clean. Not like, I've got to points where I accept I'm going to die and it becomes so peaceful. It's an experience where I can never... I pray, I try to meditate, I do everything possible. We go swimming, I go into saunas, and I just love trying to relax. I need something to release that tension and help me relax. Prayer and meditation is massive for me. That useless drug addict from acne to come in here and say, I'll try and pray and I'll try and meditate. I can't tell you that stuff. And oh yeah, this one thing, I must finish on this. In the step working guide, I struggle. I can read and I can write. But I have something in me. When I read something sometime and it asks me a question, I'll get a total mental block. And I do not know. I've had it all my life and I do not know how to answer something. I can read it. I just don't know. And I've seen it's a part of being dyslexic, that I can read things and I can write, but I just can't give you an answer in writing. So my sponsor took me through this basic text, and we used to sit down for hours just talking, and we were sharing our experience, and that's how I originally went through the work, just by talking. And last year I said to my sponsor, I'd like to try and go through the step working guide, but I explained my problem, and I explain this all the time, so someone else might not feel alone. He said, all right, he said, you get stuck with anything, don't answer, we'll just sit down and speak about it. I said, well, do it. If you don't know how to answer something, we'll just sit down and speak about it. And then I've got the step working guide, and I opened it up, and on the preface of the step working guide, it says, this book was originally called the step writing guide, but our fellowship is so vast that we couldn't keep it as a writing guide. There's some people in our fellowship who can't read and write. So this fellowship is meant to be inclusive, not exclusive. So I'll try to let people know, if you can't read or write, you can still practice the steps in your life. And that's the action what it takes. Some people, I don't know if they think writing is recovery, and a part of it might be. But I believe it's all of it is the action I take in my life. So I'll just, so because this is getting recorded, another addict might come across this thing. Sitting there thinking, I can't read and write, I'm too embarrassed to ask someone to sponsor me. I've sat down with people where I read to them and I explain and I'll share my experience. A guy phoned me up last year and said, Vince, I heard you sharing about this thing. I've come across someone and they're dyslexic. I said, sit down with them, see what their difficulties are. They might be able to read, they may be able to write, they just might be like me. If they can't read, try and get them on audio format so they can listen to it. sit down with them, you can read it to them, and you can sit down and speak about the steps, and then they can start applying this in their life. No one has to be excluded from this, because I hear so much about writing. I think of the person like me who has a difficulty with that stuff in their life, where you can still practice this stuff. And I believe that's why I'm still here, because I actually try and practice it. And I don't know what to say, but I truly love doing sharing my experience with narcotics, because it's helped me so much, and I hope you've got something out of it.